sleep. The beat.
Hello, girls and gays.
Hello, girls, gays, and theys.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to Rate, Debate, Recreate. I'm Sammy Purcell.
And I'm Logan Keller.
Well, we're back for episode 11. Hey, Logan.
Yes, Sammy.
Some of my favorite words are actually words that start and end in vowels.
Wow. What are they?
Well, I'll tell you, some of them, there are many, are ice or adventure.
Oh, yeah.
Or igloo is also a fun one.
Vocabulary queen.
I know. I could go on for hours, but
my favorite words are bottle and serendipity.
Neither one of those start and end in a vowel.
I know. Disappointing.
Disappointing. Tough stuff. Well, today we're going to talk about some of our favorite musicals that also end or start and end in vowels. Oh, so exciting.
I'm excited.
Oh my God. I'm so excited about these two, for real. Anyway.
Yeah.
We get to talk about words that start and end in vowels. We get to talk about women, just things I love.
Yeah. Honestly, the two only things I need.
The only things I care about, really. Oh my gosh. Okay. Do you want to explain to our beautiful
Absolutely. I would love to. So for those of you who are tuning in for the first time or just need a little refresher on what we're doing here, each week, Sammy and I will discuss two musicals that are fit into a predetermined category. And what we'll do is describe the musicals and rate them out of 10, debate the merits of each show, and then at the end, we'll recreate a part of it to make the show even better. Because we are the experts.
We are. It's true. No one knows better. So as we said, we have a category each week. And if you haven't caught on already, this week, that category is shows that start and end in a vowel. We're getting
wow.
Really, really pulling teeth. Okay. My show is Aida.
And my show is Evita.
Amazing.
They also got the same structure, like I don't know, consonant structure or like
Aida.
Evita. Yeah,
emphasis is on the correct than the same
the
syllable. Vast is on the same syllable. That's how we go. Okay. All right. That's awesome. Well, let's get started. Should I start with a little summary of
Aida? Go for it.
So I'm not going to get too in depth on this one. I think if you're listening to this and you don't really know what happens in Aida, I implore you to go try to watch it somehow, either live in the future, not right now, or whatever, you know, you can figure out how to find it.
Do that.
I don't know. Anyway, so simply put, the story of Aida follows a love triangle between the Egyptian soldier Radames, his betrothed Princess Amneris, and her Nubian slave Aida, who was the princess of Nubia, is the princess of Nubia before she was captured. And so the story just kind of follows the forbidden romance between the soldier Radames and the Nubian slave Aida, with Amneris there to give some sass. And also, she plays a pretty big role at the end. But again, I don't want to give it away. Everyone should try to make time
to
experience it for yourself. It's really great. And also, I think I've been taking too long on my summaries. So I'm going to move along and just give that very basic kind of outlook on it. So rating. I kind of want to give it two ratings because I came up against this in research. So as a historical text, I'm going to give Aida 0 out of 10. but as a melodramatic romance, it's 10 out of 10 Adam Pascal throat rasps for me.
Okay, good to know. So let's talk a little bit about Evita. Evita follows the story of Eva Perón, who was the first lady of Argentina, and had a really, really huge impact in general on Argentina's people and is still today. Although, like, people definitely have mixed opinions and criticisms of her and her husband, I think it's still undeniable to say is like in many ways iconic, and one of the most iconic people in Argentina, and is often called the spiritual leader of Argentina, or was often called the spiritual leader of Argentina. Yeah, the musical basically follows her life. So we actually start the show at her death, where the city is, Buenos Aires is mourning Evita's death. And then we have this character, Che, who is interestingly not Che Guevara, but like has a lot of parallels and similarities. So you can extrapolate. is the narrator, and then from there you walk through Eva Perón's life as growing up in the province of Junín in Argentina, and then all the way through her rise to the top of society, and eventually what like part of what becomes her downfall is not the right word, because she definitely died like in a really high esteem, but some of the reasons maybe that she's criticized today. Like Sammy, I also think I've been going a little long on my on my synopses. I just want to spend the most time debating, and people can watch this for themselves. So that's the synopsis I'm going to give of Evita. And I'm going to give Evita a rating of 8 out of 10 descamisados.
Wow. Can you explain for the non-Spanish speakers what that is?
Yes, I will. So,
descamisado.
Yeah. Sammy and I met in a Spanish class. descamisados literally means like those without shirts on. And what that refers to is the group of people that Eva Perón is really credited with organizing and rallying behind her husband, Juan Perón, when he was running for office in like the 40s, I think.
Awesome. Okay. I think I'm going to give Evita, I might lowball it a little bit. I think I'm going to give it like 6.8 descamisados. I'm going a little
low. Wow. I did not expect like that.
Historical context. And I feel a little iffy about it all. And
that's fair.
Unlike Aida, the romance of it all is not enough to raise my spirits.
I am really torn on what to give Aida. As we're both going to discuss, there are just some like really problematic elements of the show. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to like take the show in without that context. So like similar to Sammy, if we're thinking about the historical perspective, yeah, it's getting a 0. as a show in general, and like considering the music and some of the parts of the show that we do have and are less problematic, I'll give the show a 5 out of 10. Okay. 5 out of 10 Adam Pascal's throat grunts.
Oh yeah, baby, give it to me. Oh my gosh. All right, shall we move on to the discussion?
Let's move on. debate.
Yes. Okay, so we want to start kind of with this central question about both shows that we're going to try to answer. So who do you think is the better central figure of the show named after them? Aida or Evita? Who wants to start? I can start. I think mine's pretty short. And basically, my answer really hinges on Heather Headley, who originated the role more so than the role of Aida itself. Because the role of Aida is like, honestly, I'm going to talk about this a lot, but I think Aida has just like straight up some of the most just like bangable music of any musical that's ever existed. Maybe not the like best or most like, I don't want to say like thoughtful, but maybe a little thoughtful, most like best or thoughtful or like intelligent or whatever, like highfalutin, but it is just straight up like bangers all the way through. Like you can just listen to that thing all the way through and it's a great time every single time. Everyone likes it, I think. I mean, if you don't, let me know. But the character of Aida specifically has just, I mean, like incredible songs. Like maybe one of the best, like, or like I would not play Aida, but like would be like really excited to like get to sing all those songs in a row, you know? Like,
yeah.
like Dance of the Robe, Easy is Life, Elaborate Lives, The Gods Love Nubia. Just like absolute, like you get to show off so much, and it's such a it's a really hard role and like a really rewarding role to sing, I would imagine. And that brings me to Heather Headley, who I think this is probably like the most iconic role that shares the name with the musical, more so than Evita, because when you think Aida, you think Heather Headley. And I don't, and as much as I like love Patti LuPone, and I do think there's a certain amount of like when you think Evita, which is also like kind of problematic. When you think Evita, you think Patti LuPone. She's not Hispanic, I don't think.
She's not Latina.
Yeah. So what was I saying? I just lost my train of thought. But when you think Aida, you think Heather Headley. And I don't think there is another like role actor association besides like maybe Idina Menzel as Elphaba, for me at least, that like was so perfect, and she just like absolutely crushes it. And I just think that makes Aida like the most iconic thing. And maybe that's a bad thing, because like, and I mean, you always think of Heather Headley when you think of this role, but I just think she's so fucking good, and she's amazing and iconic, and I don't have like other more descriptive critical words to describe her. I just think she slays.
Yeah, that's a really fair argument. Okay, first of all, I need to 10 out of 10 agree on the Heather Headley front. Like, I will definitely say that Heather Headley, like, out of all the actresses that have played Aida and Evita, like, if you're to stack rank them, like, Heather Headley is above all Evita actresses that I've at least encountered. I do think as a role, I might have a preference for Evita. I think that, so yeah, I'll talk a little bit about like some of the problematic slash like, in some cases, I might argue not actually that problematic parts of Evita. and I think that like this musical at its core is about celebrating this woman who means so much to Argentinian history. And it's written, I think, like really, really well and beautifully in the music. Is it like a 100% accurate or 100% like fair and really critical take on Evita? No, not really. Not at all, I would say.
I don't know.
And I think that Eva Perón in this show has some of the most iconic music. Like we're talking about music, we have like Don't Cry for Me Argentina is easily one of the most well-known and for good reason songs. But in addition to that, there's also just some like crazy bangers, and I would argue that the majority of them are sung by Eva in the show, which I love. But like Buenos Aires, A New Argentina, that's probably my favorite act one closer of all time. There are just so many moments where she is like flying, and that to me is, I think, what makes her the better protagonist. I think I'm more inclined to take Evita as like the, I don't know where I was going with that, starting that sentence. Take her as what? I think I'm more inclined to choose Evita as
take
the
her hand in marriage.
Take her hand in marriage. Yeah, no, thank you. yeah, to choose her as the role that I think is more iconic of the two.
Okay,
that's it on that.
You know, I think I might kind of have to agree with you. Only, I don't know. I think like, I'm trying to think of how to phrase this, because Aida has to like act. It's a love story, right? And I think like when you're acting in love with someone, I don't want to say it's like not as difficult, but if you have a good scene partner, it's like a little more comfortable, you know? And like, there are a bunch of, I think there are like a bunch of clips on YouTube of her, of Heather Headley and Adam Pascal. And like, they obviously have a lot of chemistry, and it's like, I think I've said this on this podcast before, but Adam Pascal has had to have sex on stage like 70 times. And he's just like, he's very like comfortable, like being in a love scene. And Heather Heavily seems to be as well. So like, I think it's easy. It's like great when you find a like scene partner with chemistry, but Evita has to like be on her own a lot more. Yeah. I
would almost argue that like she is the constant in that show, because everything else like is more fleeting. And maybe Jay, you could argue, but
I was about to say, we'll talk about him. but and I guess like even though Aida is like the central figure of Aida, excuse me, just burped. The show itself is like a lot more spread out between Radames, Amneris, and Aida, probably.
Yeah.
Aida probably has Aida and Radames probably have a little more than Amneris, if I'm thinking about it off the top of my head, but it's still like a little more spread out between the trio.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Okay. You might have won this round.
Well, let's talk about the shows, because I think there's a lot more we could get into with both of them. I might start a little bit with Evita, if that's okay. So just for context, the version of the show that I watched in preparation for this episode is the 2012 Broadway revival, which featured Elena Roger as Eva Perón, Ricky Martin as Che.
Oh my god. Wow.
Michael Cerveris, who is also in Fun Home, previous episode on the pod, as Juan Perón. Okay, a few things, I guess, to start. I have seen parts of and listened to all of thousands of times the original Broadway cast with Patti LuPone and Mandy Patinkin. Yeah.
Do not forget his name.
Oh, no, I did not forget that. and, like, I just have to agree with how, like, iconic that original cast recording is. And I have to say that, like, wow, does this show just sound so much better when the people singing it actually speak Spanish.
Yeah.
So Elena, who plays Eva, is actually Argentinian, and like actually speaks Spanish, and like no shit. Maybe shade to Patti LuPone. I mean, yeah, that's the thing. She can take it. I love her. She's an icon. But like, maybe shade is that like her Spanish leaves a lot of room to be desired. And it's hard for me to imagine she is playing a legit Argentinian in this show. Yeah. So that's what I'm watching. So I want to start off with some of the criticisms of the show that I looked into when I was researching for this podcast, because I think some of them are valid and some of them maybe I'm like wrong and I'm open to criticism, but I think I actually disagree with on this show. The first is the male gaze is really dominant in this show. And that's a criticism that I agree with. I think that this show paints Eva's rise to power solely through the lens of her relationships with men. And like literally she's kind of like thrown around from man to man. And obviously she's like bringing a lot to the table. She has like a shit ton of charisma as this like radio host and has a lot of social influence, especially with the lower class in Argentina. But it's like, it's almost painted in a way that pretty much just credits that to her relationships with men that she's had. I will say there was a recent New York production. I think it was at the Kennedy Center. I actually didn't get to see it, but I was reading about it, and it was praised by some for fixing this in a way. And the way that they did this was by having two actresses play Eva. And the first actress was like the young Eva up until Buenos Aires, which is halfway through Act One. And they portray her more as like a victim of these men, as opposed to like her using these men, which is like perhaps, I don't know if it's more aligned with reality actually, but maybe it is. But what I like about that is that that then informs the second Eva for the rest of the show, And the first one is still there on stage, like as kind of her shadow and her past and her her trauma. So yeah, I didn't get to see that, but an interesting take and potential, I don't know if it was successful, but potentially a successful way to take away the sole focus of the show from being about the male gaze.
And like, there's no way for us to know, because I think she is always painted as like kind of vampy and like manipulative, and like she was, like, she's a politician, like I'm sure she was like a little manipulative, but like there's like no way for us to know. And even she was in this book that I have when I was little that was literally called Rarely, like, Well-Behaved Women Rarely Make History, and she was one of the women in it. And even in that book, because I was like a child and I still remember reading it, and it was, I mean, not like explicit, but it was like she was able to like manipulate her way to the top because she was like popular with dudes. And like, that probably has some truth to it, but I don't know. It's like, this show is also like made by dudes. So like, you know, it's just like an interesting framing device. That's cool. I would want to see that, like, Kennedy.
I know, me too. I really do. So one of the second criticisms that I have mixed feelings about is the whitewashing of this show, especially with like the older productions. I don't actually have a great sense of the newer productions. Like, I saw the one, the most recent Broadway revival. But here's my take on that. So as we just talked about, Patti LuPone and Mandy Patinkin, among other actors, I think Bob Gunton played Juan Perón and some other people, are all playing these Argentinian characters, and they're all white. My like deep take is that I actually don't know if I see that much of a problem with this. And here's why. First of all, I guess I think it is important to say that I do identify as Latino and white. And I think that that in and of itself is something I don't know if a lot of people like understand is like a thing. So I do want to clarify, like, I do think that this show should be done with like a Latino, Latina, Latinx actors and actresses. I do think that should be done. But what I don't agree with is that this is like a similar, like that you can compare something like this to like a blackface or yellowface situation on stage.
Or perhaps what happened to Aida.
Yeah, exactly. Because at the end of the day, like, I do really firmly believe that any role should be able to be played by anyone of any race, unless that role specifically, it's like integral to that role that the person is of a certain race. And that is the case in Aida. In Evita, like, it is, she is Argentinian, but she's white and blonde. Like the real ass Eva Perón was. So I definitely don't think that like casting white actors, even if they're not like Latinx, is like a sin in the same category as like yellowface and you know, blackface and other like really bad miscasting that we see on Broadway. That being said, I do really think that like it just should be done with Latino folks.
And I think
like,
it's just
should.
Like you said, it just like these people have been speaking Spanish since they were born. Like they're better at it. They understand, like, it's just, it makes sense, you know?
Yeah. So that's my take on the like whitewashing part of this. Okay, and then the last like big criticism that I encountered was just that Eva is not given enough nuance. And I think that I half agree, half don't with this. I do think that she is given a lot of empowerment's not the right word. Like, I think that she, despite her being like portrayed as being kind of going from man to man at times, and that's contributing to her rise to the top, I also do feel like the show like pretty much always puts her in control and puts her in the power. She's making the decisions for herself. That being said, I do think that there are definitely times when she's not given that. So I think that's a fair critique, but I think another like part of this criticism that I was seeing a lot was that she's not given enough nuance in the sense of like criticisms of her. And I think that's also fair. Yeah, I do think that like some of the things I've read, maybe they're not giving enough nuance to the situation. One example of that is like there are a lot of accusations of Eva Perón as like a fascist and enabling fascism, which I think that it's undeniable that her husband was. But I don't, first of all, number one, I don't know that you can like necessarily attribute that to her based on her husband's actions, especially when she like died young and wasn't even like around long enough to quote unquote like change him, as if that should be her responsibility in the first place. Mm-hmm. But the second thing is like, there's not proof. Like, I was doing research on this and there's not like proof or historical writing that implies that she was a fascist or that she had those kind of beliefs. She did like definitely make mistakes and was not a perfect person. But in my mind, I don't think that she's like a person or a character that doesn't deserve to have stories told about them because they were egregious. I think that maybe what actually is true is just that she's a person that was flawed, like all of us are. And I think that this show doesn't do a good enough job of showing the flaws.
Yeah.
It really, really paints her in a super idealistic and positive light.
Yeah, I agree. And I was looking up some of the like fascism allegations too, because I remember learning about that. I saw this show, which I have a fun anecdote about later, but I saw the Ricky Martin and Elena Roger one, and so
live.
I was like, yes, live. Oh,
I did not.
Yes, I did. It was beautiful. I was visiting. I was like 18, and I was visiting NYU with my mom, and she wanted. We couldn't agree on any show to see. Like, I wanted to see Newsies, I think, because I thought, and I was trying to like pick shows. This is a tangent. I was trying to pick shows that I thought like she would enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, Newsies, like people love Newsies, like my mom will want to see that. And she was like, I don't care about the newspaper, just fun because I'm in grad school for journalism. So we were like trying to figure out what to see, and then I said Ricky Martin's in Evita, and my mom went, ooh.
I mean, same.
Yeah. And then when he came out, I mean, he's just like very, very handsome, and he like kind of stalks out on stage, and he's like very like strapping, and like every woman in the audience and probably a lot of the men were just like titillated, like everyone just kind of like started whispering to whoever there was.
Yeah, I have to say, I when he came onto stage, I was like, oh wow, love Ricky Martin, very sexy, like we love, great on the eyes, but I think he might just be like a, you know, a star casting. I thought he was great. He was like a phenomenal Che, in my opinion.
I thought he did a great job. And maybe I'm like a little blinded by how attractive he is, but like, I thought he was great.
I did too.
A very funny story, speaking of like being able to speak Spanish, because I don't think he'd ever done like Broadway before. And it was some mm-hmm. late night show. He was telling a story about how he was like very nervous about forgetting lines. He's like, never had to do that before. And the director or someone was like, if you forget a line, just like start screaming in Spanish. And he had to do it like one time. He was like, something happened in the audience and he like forgot lines and he just started yelling about the revolution in Spanish.
I love that.
And I was like, oh, Ricky Martin. But anyway, that was a long tangent. But yeah, and I think like you said, like I think a lot of her husband's like very blatant.
Yeah.
Acceptance of fascism, because there's a lot of like weird ties between like Nazis and Germany, like going to Argentina after the war, like very like weird history there, just like taking that ideology, thank you. Oh my god. From like Europe over to a different place and like settling there. And so I do think like, I mean, it's really difficult, right? I think like a lot of that, which her husband believed, like maybe just pressed on her by association. But I also don't think it's necessarily like fair to, I don't know. It's like the show paints her as like so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
If you're gonna do that, then she probably had some agency over like what she chose to speak out against and what she chose not to.
Yeah,
I don't know her, and I definitely don't know enough about this to like blatantly paint her as one thing or the other, but I definitely think it's like a lot more complicated than the show would lead you to believe.
Absolutely. Yeah, I definitely agree with that assessment.
So yeah, it's just a little difficult. And also, I mean, it's hard when you're like making a show about a person. What are you going to do? Like get up there and be like, she's a bad person. Like,
yeah.
So I mean, I get it, but like, this is why another wonderful example of why people shouldn't just like take their history from musicals and they should look stuff up.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was great. I do want to take your whitewashing thing and kind of.
Yeah, let's go into Aida.
With Aida, a musical I love that has some issues. So I guess I'll just get started a little bit from the beginning. So Aida, of course, was a huge hit musical with music by Sir Elton John.
Woo!
Very, very famous man. Love him. Big fan. Mm-hmm. And lyrics by Tim Rice, like a truly iconic duo, Disney royalty, Tim Rice. And a book by Linda Wolverton, who also wrote She wrote Beauty and the Beast and co-wrote The Lion King. Also,
oh, yeah. Wow.
So this was originally like, and this is based off Wikipedia because that's my favorite place to go. But apparently this was originally supposed to be like a cartoon, like a Disney cartoon.
Oh.
And then it slowly evolved into a musical. And it was the second musical that Elton John and Tim Rice have written that takes place in Africa, because they also wrote The Lion King together. So it's based on the opera, blah, 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 all that good stuff. So I kind of want to getting into the whitewashing aspect of it. So obviously, like, Elton John, Tim Rice, two white dudes, right? And they've been like pretty outspoken about like why they chose to, or why they were interested in like taking on this project. And they're basically both like, well, we picked this because we love the love story. And I think that is obvious, because I think that part of it is like very well done. And there's a really funny review I want to get to next, like later on, that like completely just like spoke to me and about why I love this show so much. But I do want to talk a little bit about the conscious choice for at least like most professional productions that I know of, to cast Black actors as Aida and the rest of the Nubian people, but then to have white actors, usually, as far as I know, play the Egyptian characters, definitely in the original cast, which is what we're going to kind of focus on. And I understand like conceptually that draws a larger contrast, and that's like what they want you to see ultimately. But they're like, if that's what you're going for, there are lighter skinned Black people in the world that can mm-hmm. play these roles. And it just like, it felt so skeevy to me even when I was younger. Like I remember, and there are a lot of things that I look back on that I liked when I was younger, and I'm like, oh God, I was 10 and stupid. But even back then I was like, they're Egyptian. This is weird. Like, what's going on?
That ain't no whitey.
Yeah. That's Adam Pascal. That's fucking Roger. But I was trying to look up some critical analysis of this.
Like that 10-year-old Sammy was going, that's fucking Roger.
Truly, I was. I was like, that is 10-year-old me was watching Rent and had some thoughts. But I was trying to look up some critical analysis of this because it always struck me as weird, as it should. And I came across like so many examples of high schools recently being forced to cancel their productions of Aida. And a lot of it was because like the students spoke up and were like,
yeah,
why are we doing this show? We're all white. And I came across this article in the Michigan Daily where this columnist, who I hope I am getting their name right, Eli Rallo. I'm so sorry if that's not how you pronounce it. But in the article, they talk about being cast as a Nubian slave when they were 13 at a school that was 95% white. And that's just wrong. And I think like, we talked about this, I think, a little bit on the Millie podcast. There are all these examples of like these shows that in theory are really good for like high schools to put on, which like Aida, maybe not. It's really hard to sing, but like do your thing. But like these shows that are like, oh, this will like put a lot of butts in seats, or like, we can do this show. It's like a good high school or middle school show. And like Hairspray is a good example. Like, if you don't have enough like Black kids at your school in the drama department to be able to put on Hairspray accurately, maybe you shouldn't do it. And that's the same thing with like Asian actors in Millie or Black actors in Aida. And there's just so many examples of high schools, especially like if you can look all the stuff up. I think Millie even had like, there's like a movement to like stop doing it.
Yeah, they also had a high, like a big high school like revolution almost.
Yeah, and it kind of makes me want to cry, because it makes me proud of teenagers. But yeah. But it's just, I think it got like ingrained in a lot of people who love musical theater at like a young age, that like, well, this is just like the way this show has always been done. Aida specifically, like, well, this is just the way this show has always been done, so it's okay. And like, if anyone, I don't know, I would love to like hear other opinions if there are any, but it is always like struck me as so, so weird, and like something that is so universally accepted, especially in a time when like I think people are starting to speak out about these things. At least like, I know people were before, but like white people or people were like starting to pay attention, you know? I don't know. Like, who was someone in original cast told me the first time they saw Aida, Aida was a white girl. And I was what the fuck? Like, she was like, yeah, I thought Aida was supposed to be
that's
white.
A toughie.
I was, like, 20. And I was like, she's from Nubia. I don't know.
Nubia, Texas.
Oh. It's just so weird.
That's Aida. That's my Mike Keller, my dad. That's his accent.
Oh my god, I love it. Shout out to your dad. Oh my god. Anyway, that's my big thing with Aida. And again, like, I do want to go into a little bit of positive now, so I'm going to focus on the love story of it all. I think this love story is so melodramatic, and the big reason like a lot of people like fall in love with the show when they're like 14 is very astutely, I think, pointed out in this really fucking funny Variety review that I read. And I didn't agree with a lot of what he said, but this like one particular part that he picked out, I thought it was so funny. He basically said this show is, if you are a teeny bopper who loved the WB and loved Dawson's Creek, this show is for you. This guy's Charles Isherwood. I'm like, I swooned over Dawson's Creek as a young teen. So that really.
And just like rewatched it, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I rewatched every single season. It was lovely. It was a great, like, get me through the pandemic rewatch. Just like imagining myself in Capeside. It was great. So let me find the exact quote. I really liked it. He said, Aida is still not a Broadway musical for the ages. So he saw like it before, like in previews, and then he saw it after they like made some updates to it. And he goes, it's not even a Broadway musical for all ages, but it has been transformed from a garish misfire into an extravagantly pretty pop fantasy that's aimed carefully and cannily at teeny boppers and teeny boppers at heart, aka me. This show will delight the kids who swoon over Dawson's Creek and spend millions on Backstreet Boys and Christina Aguilera records. With an advance of $15 million, it'll be packing them in for some time to come. That's a ton of money, first of all. I just thought that was like pretty an accurate read of like how to enjoy Aida. Like, throw out historical accuracy with it, because if you like think too hard about it, you probably won't have a lot of fun. And like, there's time, we should think hard about these things, which is what we're trying to do here a little bit. But the like love story of it is like very melodramatic and fun in that respect. It doesn't end quite happily, but but he also said in this review that the show doesn't have any memorable songs. And I would just like to say it's the biggest lie I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, absolutely not.
Sir, you're a giant liar.
I know that we frequently discuss my musical theater workout playlist.
Oh, yeah.
On here. It's public on Spotify, so like follow it. Mm-hmm. But I would say arguably the most listened to song on that playlist is Dance of the Robe. There is nothing to me like, I'm not like a runner really, like I don't love running, but when this song is on, I can do whatever. Like, I can run as long as you want. Well, as long as the song goes. The dance break.
So 4 minutes.
And then at the end of the song, there's this part where she, like, comes back after the dance break. And the... It's so fucking hype. I know that the actual song wasn't playing, so I was just saying duh randomly, but I need you to listen to it.
And it's really good for audio.
Yeah, it's like so hype. And tell me you can't like break a world record listening to that, because I think you can.
You could run a 4 minute mile. The song is 4 minutes and 6 seconds long.
I probably have. 4 minute mile.
Oh my gosh. Well, do you have, before you do your bop list, do you have anything else to say about Evita, Eva?
Yeah, I have a couple other things I want to say. I've mentioned this very briefly, but I do want to talk about how much better this show is when the characters actually speak Spanish, not only on the Spanish parts of the show, which there are, but also just in general with the show's in English. So I don't know, when Patty did the role, like it was like she would speak in English and then switch to her like Spanish voice. But in this one, they speak in their authentic Spanish voice and then speak English with like a Hispanic accent.
Yeah.
It's not perfect English, which I really enjoy. And I thought Elena was, I don't know, I read some reviews that like weren't super favorable for her. I don't know. I agree. She didn't have the strongest belt in the world. And this is like a really, really belty show. That being said, I thought she was a phenomenal actress, dancer, and singer. Mm-hmm. I think that she doesn't like fully chest belt a lot of the like crazy high notes that Patti LuPone did, which by the way, she like was kind of like forced to do apparently, and was a really shitty experience for her. And she's now talked out against like her experience with Evita. It's like really horrible. And yeah. Patti. So like, first of all, there's that. But second of all, like, I'm like the biggest fan of belting in the world. Like, I love that shit. I'm never going to complain if you opt to belt instead of mixing. Like, I know that doesn't make me a good theater critic, but it's my truth. But like, also she does, I think she does a really great job of like, I don't think that you have to, I won't complain if you will, but like, I think that she has interpretations of these songs that aren't quite that. And I think she gave a very strong performance. So I wanted to give my little shout out to her. And then the other two standout songs that I really want to talk about. First is Another Suitcase in Another Hall. Kind of random song. It like has a purpose, but first of all, the cast of Evita is like, in terms of actual characters who have songs or speaking roles, there's only six total. And the cast is much bigger, like the ensemble, but there's only six characters that have singing or speaking roles. And one of them is Perón's mistress, who that's literally her name in the show. And she just sings this one song called Another Suitcase in Another Hall. And it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And like, I get that the idea of it is to show that like could have been Eva and like, that, I don't know, that part of it, I guess, but it's really random because she just shows up and then never shows up again, and like Eva just like runs over her into his apartment, and then she's like,
she really did that. Like, she like, he had some other woman staying. This is like based on this book that I read as a child. I'm gonna try to find it if I ever go home again. She apparently like, he had like a woman around a lot that he was with, and Eva Perón was like, nope, and apparently like moved.
That's literally what happens on the show. Yeah. Literally, she moves her shit. So like, but anyway, song's a bop. Whether or not it belongs in the show, it's a bop.
Oh,
the second one, surprisingly, I'm not going to talk about Don't Cry For Me, Argentina. It's a phenomenal song, but everyone, I don't have anything new to add that it's not already like in the zeitgeist of that song. But A New Argentina does not get the respect it deserves, in my opinion. This is how you close an act. Like, it's so, for those of you who don't know or haven't seen the show, A New Argentina is it's kind of like during the election part, or like it's a montage during that time, and it shows Eva Perón rallying the Descamisados, and each time she's like speaking to these people, and her whole like shtick is it repeats kind of throughout the thing, and she's like, I'm one of you, like I know what it's like, he's the only one who can fix it, like and each time she's speaking, the crowds get bigger and bigger and bigger until the whole stage is like revolutionizing and voting, and it's like they have like pitchforks with fire on them, or pitchforks. And torches.
Yeah, there you go.
It gives me chills. That's really and great. the very last line that they repeat three times is, "A new Argentina will not be denied."
Yeah, I can't hear anyone else sing A New Argentina but Mandy Patinkin. You know, like his voice is like ingrained.
Yeah. A New Argentina. That's a pretty good Mandy impression.
That's pretty good. Maybe. Oh man, that's good.
So those are just some thoughts I wanted to say. But overall, I really love this show. I don't think it's like the best from a critical perspective when I like, in a similar way to what that one review was when you think about it too much, then maybe it's like not as good. Yeah. But at like face value, which sometimes that's all I have the brain capacity for. This is like such a fun show. And the music and choreography is so Argentinian inspired and Latin inspired. And I love that about it. Mm-hmm. I really love the show.
Oh, wow. Well, I also really love Aida, and I was going to start to do my bop list, but honestly,
whole show,
the whole thing, except maybe Radames's letter. I don't know. That one's, I might not skip it because it's only like a minute. Yeah, it's like a minute and a half long. So like, I might not skip it, but if I was going to choose one to take off, that'd be it. So I guess I'm just going to kind of do what you did a little bit and just like talk about what songs I fucking love.
Yeah.
Dance
of the Robe, number one for me.
Dance of the Robe is definitely number one. Like when I was little, I used to like act out musicals in my room. And that was like one of the big ones I would play at a purple boombox. And I'm pretty sure I had the Aida CD. I must have, or I like burned it onto a CD because I loved that song so much. And I would just like act it out in my room and dance around my room and sing the end of Dance of the Robe, like screeching.
It's Aida!
Yeah. Literally like screeching at the top of my 10-year-old lungs, just like not well at all. I don't know how my parents like survived. And then this show has a ton of really good like small group songs, like quartets and trios and that kind of stuff. I mean, it has a lot of good solos, and it also has a lot of good ensemble numbers. It's just stacked. But specifically, A Step Too Far and Not Me are like honestly two of my favorite songs in the entire world. I think like everyone sounds so good, and I think it's really hard to find people who, and I don't, again, I don't want to sound like I'm insulting them because I'm not, but these three actors, like Shari Renee Scott, Heather Headley, and Pascal, they all have very distinctive voices.
Yeah.
Like, oh, definitely. Very distinctive. Like you can tell them all apart. And I think like, and maybe this is the magic of production on this album, but I think they like sound pretty good together. And that's hard to do when you sound as distinct, like mm-hmm. you sound so distinctive, you know? You're like easy to pick out in a crowd, it's hard to blend.
I mean, Cheri Renee Scott literally has like a musical where people have to like imitate her distinct
yeah.
voice.
Yeah. I know. So like I think I really love all those songs. And Not Me is a quartet. Damian Perkins is also in that song, and he's also very good. I love that they love Elaborate Live so much that they just basically do the same song twice and switch who sings lead. Great. They call the second one a reprise, but it's like literally exactly the same song. It's almost the same length. So it's like 6 seconds shorter. Enchantment Passing Through, of course. I also think that this this musical has like a really iconic opening, and it's interesting because it's such a slow opening number until they go
until
this is
a story.
Like every story is a love story. Everyone knows it. It is incredibly iconic. She sings it in like the history museum that they're in or whatever. Like, what a weird opening, but it works. I like it. And it's, I don't know. I really love the show. My arts criticism professor would be really mad at me for all this because he hates when we sound like PR people. And this whole episode, I've just been like, I love this show.
Yeah, well, we don't love it until we getting paid. So hit us up, Elton and...
Elton, Tim.
And Tim Rice also did Evita.
Wait, for real?
I think so, yeah. Oh, yeah, it was Andrew Lloyd Webber and Tim Rice.
Okay, well...
Tim, hit us up. Sir, I loved your performance in Scary Movie 2 as well. Happy to talk about that more.
Is that... That's not Tim... That's not Tim Rice.
Yes, it is.
You're lying.
I'm not.
I'm looking this up right now. Who is he? What?
Oh, no. It's a different Tim Rice. Damn it, I'm always Tim so damn Curry? Confident.
What do you mean?
I don't know.
Do you mean Tim Curry?
Yes, I do.
Oh my God. I'm going to kill you. Lamar Odom. Tim Rice.
No, Tim Curry.
Tim Curry. Tim Curry and Leslie Odom Jr. going to sue us.
Or pay us.
Or pay us. We're giving them free publicity this way.
Yeah. Well, with that being said, should we move to the recreate?
Yes, we should. I can go first. Mine's a bit
okay, go for it.
This week. Okay. So... in just a little backstory, in the original cast, the group that me and Logan were both in, I was in a show where I sang My Strongest Suit, which is a song from Aida. And it's a really great song. It's a bop, and it's just all about like looking good and liking nice clothes. And I was thinking, you know what? This song should literally be about women in suits. Like, literally, who has the strongest suit? So I sat down and I was thinking about like which like famous women do I enjoy seeing in suits the most, or like who has worn the most iconic suits. Mm-hmm. And I tried to be like, there's a lot more than you think.
Oh yeah.
So I tried to like spread the love a little bit and like pick women from different like professions, like actresses, singers, kind of all over the celebrity spectrum. Okay.
Are you gonna like do their impressions too?
No, I don't think so. mostly because I don't think I'd be very good at it. I was holding my beer bottle like a microphone just now though. which I can continue to do. Anyway, so I changed some lyrics, but not a ton. So I'm only gonna really mention the ones I changed. So we all know how this starts off with, in life, one has to face a huge assortment. So starting us off, we have the queen of suits herself, Miss Diane Keaton, coming in, giving us an intro, like the mother of suits. She is our gateway into the suit world. So she sings the intro all the way to I Am What I Wear and How I Dress. It's all the same. And then I thought, you know, after Diane, we should bring in like the new guard a little bit. Let's bring in someone new. So we have the one, the only, Emmy-winning Miss Zendaya herself singing.
Oh!
Oof. Oh, now I believe in looking like my time on Earth is cooking. And she says, whether slim fit, pinstripe, tweed, or even checked. Yeah. And then we bring in a new girl, new woman, excuse me, Kate Blanchett, queen in her own right. And she goes, on red carpets, cameras all shoot, every fiber of my glam suit is displayed to quite remarkable effect. Then we have Miss, no, actually, Ellen, you were invited, herself, Dakota Johnson, coming in hot. And she sings the From Your Cradle via Trousseau section all the way to Never Compromise Except No Substitute. And then we bring in the Queen of New York City, Chloe Sevigny. And she gets a little bit right. Thanks for the gasp. I was like, she wears a good.
I love her.
Love her a lot. And she has a little, some lyric changes. She goes, I would rather wear a blazer than a gown to a fundraiser.
I would rather wear a blazer. Yeah.
For suits have always been my strongest suit. And then, you know, when they have that like, overwear, underwear, anytime, like the background singers. So I figure that could be just like Haim, the band. And they can come in wearing some really nice suits and do some of their fun, cool dancing as they
like
are
pastel suits. Yes. Yeah, yes. With a little like bolo tie maybe.
Yes, absolutely. And instead of overwear, underwear, that whole thing, they go, double breasts, classic fit, tweed or suede. I love it. Da-na-na, da-na-na. And then we have, to start off the next verse, Miss Serena Vanderwoodson herself, Blake Lively. She is a real hit on this podcast, apparently.
Yeah, apparently.
And she has that little first part of the second verse, staying at her heading townwards. It's all the same. And then we have Rihanna coming in hot with the next section of that verse. And she goes, whether business, casual, or formal, it may seem a bit abnormal, but I rock a suit outrageously all the time. And then another queen of suits, Miss Janelle Monae, is coming in next.
Wow.
You who are invited to my wardrobe are delighted as they wander through my suits to find en route. The ladies of Haim go, we're wandering through your suits. And then rounding out, Diane Keaton comes back in just to give us a little, you know, bookend. She goes, I will wear my suits with pride. I rock them all the time, for suits have always been my strongest suit. Here we go. And then we kind of just cycle throughout the ladies again as they finish out the song. But yeah, that's my recreate this week. We love suits. Love women.
Wow. I love that. I think that was phenomenal. I do think you probably missed a couple of people.
I did. Can you, who would you add? Who should I add?
I have two immediately that come to mind, one of which is the center of my recreate. Okay, first one, if we were just going to do like a musical theater suit reference, mm-hmm. a cool modern one we can do is Caitlin Kinnunen from The Prom.
Yes!
Which is coming out like as a movie in like 2 weeks.
Yes, I'm worried. I'm really upset. Also excited.
Yeah, I'm really upset that they didn't go with, honestly, like the entire original cast, but like especially Caitlin Kinnunen. No shade to, I don't remember the person who's playing that the role of Emma, but
it's not Ariana DeBose. She's doing the other one.
Yeah, she's doing the other one.
I don't know
her name, but like, no shade. I'm sure you're gonna be amazing. But I got to see the original Broadway cast, and that show blew me the fuck away. Aww. Maybe we'll talk about it in another episode, honestly. Anyway, Caitlin Kinnunen. Second one, the queen.
Lead in.
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Yes, she does. Congress in a suit, baby.
Wow. Okay. Amazing. Well, I'll move on to mine. Kind of gave a little hint. So what I wanted to do was rethink Evita with a more modern character or modern politician. Mm-hmm. And I just want to start off by saying what I'm not doing here is trying to like draw direct parallels between the lives of Eva Perón and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who is who I'm doing for this show. But I do think that we can draw a lot of similarities and parallels from like their like arcs, their story arcs. And also Trump compared AOC to Evita like as an insult, and she had this like really great clapback, but both Eva and AOC are like really fiery and passionate political figures that rally around the working class. They're also both air signs, so yeah. Okay, so what I did is I'm just kind of like signposting the musical, so I've like thought about different parts of it and how they would compare from Evita to one about AOC. But then the most important part at the end is I thought of a few options for who we could cast in this show. Okay, so the musical Evita starts at Eva Perón's funeral. So I was thinking, sadly, it could be the same for AOC. But in the dimension where this show exists, she had lived a really long and healthy life and did not die of cancer at a young age like Eva Perón.
Very happy.
She had the most happy, peaceful death. So then we move to, so in the show, we get a little bit of Eva Perón's like childhood. I was thinking we could have some of AOC's childhood in the Bronx. Maybe we have some like scenes where we show her witnessing discrimination against different types of people, potentially even herself. And that kind of like paints her view of the world. Then she goes to college. This is like the Buenos Aires phase of this show. So here she starts to develop herself. She's studying. A whole new world opens up. I thought a funny like Easter egg could be, you know that video of AOC in college doing that like dance on the roof? I thought like maybe we could incorporate that choreo somehow.
Amazing.
So then we skip to her political rise to the top. Where she is defeating the Democratic incumbent and shaking up the House and, like, as we know, the entire national political scene. Mm-hmm. Of course, we have to have some cameos, maybe a quartet from the other squad members. Right. So then we end Act One. this was my favorite part. So a new Argentina. So this is kind of where we meet present day. So the rest is just the future that I'm speaking into reality. I'm making this up. Okay. So the song A New Argentina becomes A Green New Deal. And this is where she rallies public support for a revolutionary Green New Deal act. In the same way that we do iconically in A New Argentina, where she's like speaking to the masses and more people join the movement over time. I would want to have some cameos by Bernie and Greta. And yeah, it's the same type of huge Act One closer. Awesome. Then we get to Act Two. This is all in the future. So AOC is elected president in her home district in New York City of the Bronx and Queens are really thrilled about that, but they're also lamenting the loss of their more personal connection to their beloved leader. Mm-hmm. And so AOC comes out and sings, "Don't Cry for Me, New York City." Then I was thinking we could have some kind of controversy. Obviously, humans are all flawed, even people that we put on a pedestal like AOC. So I don't know what that would be, but I'm thinking that maybe AOC splits from the Democratic Party and starts a Democratic Socialist Party or something. Well, mm-hmm. I guess that wouldn't be a controversy, but maybe it could be considered one musical. And that spikes in popularity, but it really disrupts the two-party system. So that's what I'm saying is like the controversy she causes. then after two successful terms, AOC is beloved in the eyes of America today and for years to come. We see a flash forward of the rest of her life. So this is where in the show Eva dies, but I would want to end it around the same like kind of point. We're not going to go through the entire like life. So what we'd see is like a flash forward of the rest of her life as she mostly retires from the public eye and lives a more private, secluded life, which honestly is like kind of what I see for her. I don't know if that's based in reality or not. And she only like comes out to make appearances or statements when absolutely necessary. And then we end the show right where we began, at AOC's funeral, celebrating the successes of her life and all the changes that she made. Wow. So that is AOC, I'm going to call it.
AOC, that's
the name. Yeah. Of course, the most important part of this is casting, who's going to play AOC. Okay. So I have three ideas and then one, like, what I actually want to happen. Well, three ideas for casting.
There's one that is, I mean...
Obvious. Who?
Can we say it at the same time?
Yeah, one, two, three. Rachel Ziegler.
Of course.
Yes, that was my first one that came to mind.
Absolutely.
She also did her like perfectly for Halloween like last year, I think. And you know that we could write in some crazy ass belt for her. Okay. Second would be Ariana DeBose. I feel like she could do a really, who we just, is upcoming in prom. Third one, Eva Noblezada.
Oh.
I think she could fuck the fuck out of this fuck. Like, she could just kill.
Put it on the poster.
Eva Noblezada fucks the fuck out of this fuck. But despite how much I love all these people, what I actually think I would want to happen for this show would be for a brand new person to be cast and to have a really wide search for it in the same way that was recently done for Rachel Ziegler and also for Hayley Kilgore from Once on This Island. I feel like what better way to tell the story of AOC, who is a total newcomer to the political scene and really shook things up, than to like parallel that with a new musical theater actress and watch them have the same story, maybe.
Shake things up, baby.
Pick it up. So that's my recreate.
Great job. That was really fun.
Thank you.
Wow. Oh, man. Well, should we preview next week?
Yeah, I think we should.
All right.
Do you know the show? Or
yes,
the,
I do. Okay, the theme? I've got it pulled up. Can you give me a drum roll?
Ba-da-bum-bum-bum-bum.
A mouth roll. next week's category is shows with numbers in them.
Ooh, shows with numbers in them. I wonder what it could be.
It's just a big 13 podcast.
13 the musical Stan pod. That's here.
All it is.
That's the true Ari. That bring her back to her roots. 13 the musical. Yeah.
We're actually having Ariana Grande on the podcast.
Yes, so stay tuned.
My girl Ari will be there anyway. Oh. We'll see you guys next week.
See you next week. So we love you.
Love y'all. Bye. Red.